Welcome to Animal Voices on Co-op Radio 102.7 FM. It is Friday, July 9th, and we are broadcasting live from East Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. I am your co-host, Joanne Chang, and joining me today is my co-host, Allison Cole.
Greetings.
In the control room is John Prenger and Jason Kyra. On this show, we will be interviewing Peter Fricker from Vancouver Humane Society about their campaign against the Calgary Stampede. The Stampede, as you may know, starts today. Also joining us today is Rory Friedman, author of the best-selling books Skinny Bitch in the Kitch, Skinny Bitch Bun in the Oven, Skinny Bastard, and Skinny Bitchin'. Before we start the show, I'd just like to give a shout-out to our listener, Andy. I met Andy at the Main Street Car Free Day, and he started talking to me about a recent Ohio dairy farm investigation. So I asked him, where did you hear about this? And guess what he said? He said, oh, I listened to this great show on Fridays called Animal Voices.
That's too funny.
I know. I was like, no way.
Hi, Andy.
Yeah, I'm one of the co-hosts. But anyway,
now he knows.
Yeah, now he knows. But we had a really wonderful conversation. And Andy, although he's not yet a vegetarian, said something that was so profound that I'll never forget. He said, isn't it amazing how people are dying from heart disease because of all the animals they eat? It's a disease of the heart because you get it from a lack of compassion. I never thought of that before, but it's so true, and it's the biggest killer of people in developed countries. So, Andy, if you're listening, thank you very much, and I just want to say thank you to all our listeners out there. Quickly, before we move on, I want to mention an urgent request being sent out by activists working on the UVic rabbits issue. The University of Victoria has given activists until the end of the month to remove 1,600 feral rabbits from campus before they start mass slaughtering them. What is urgently needed right now is land donation, land lease, or money donation. If you know anyone or if you have some property to lease or to donate, we need to hear from you ASAP. This will not be a permanent land donation or lease, as the land will only be needed for the lifespan of the rabbits, which is 7 to 8 years, and can be returned to the donor after the rabbits die off. Activists will take care of building proper fencing on the property, neutering and spaying the animals, and providing medical support for them. If you have land or money and are able to help, please contact Susan Vickery at earthanimalrights.org. Her email address is ears@x-mail.net. That again is ears@x-mail.net, or you can call her at 250-538-8003. That's 250-538-8003. And to make donations online by PayPal, please visit earthanimalrights.org.
On my recent trip to Portland a few weeks ago, we stopped by Seattle for the evening to take a walk through the Pike Place Market, and so this presented the perfect opportunity to try a place for dinner that had been intriguing me for years now, the all-vegetarian hot dog restaurant called Cyber Dogs. Conveniently located near the downtown Seattle waterfront on Pike Street and next to the convention center, Cyber Dogs is a little hole-in-the-wall eatery that exudes a megaton of friendly atmosphere amid a menu of cruelty-free sausage sustenance. Our visit to Cyber Dogs turned out not to be just a quick stop for a hot dog, but rather a pleasant, leisurely visit for good food, internet time, and socializing. When you enter the place, you can see it's small, but yet so bursting with cultural flavor. Adorned with a variety of kitschy dog-themed ornaments and various framed pictures all over the wall, there's much to occupy your eyes here while you're waiting for your order. And if that doesn't do the trick, you can also play Pac-Man on the arcade game that doubles as a dinner table, or browse the internet for free at one of the computer terminals available. The proprietor, Tanya, who appropriately happens to be a former software engineer, can only be described as a bundle of glowing delight as she made warm chit-chat with us and the other customers and seemed to genuinely love being there. She told me that she is not a vegetarian herself, but that she lives in a vegetarian family and has had a vegetarian husband. been for over 30 years. She was completely friendly and accommodating to our requests. So let's talk about the food, shall we? The CyberDog experience is like none other, and having been a gourmand of hundreds, or dare I say thousands, of no-meat wieners in the past, I have to say that I know my veggie dogs and that a CyberDog is a truly uniquely crafted meal to be experienced. Far from just a plain frank in a bun with some ketchup, you can choose from the likes of a dog from Ipanema, containing long grain rice, black beans, tomatoes, coconut milk, heart of palm, fake beef, walnuts, cilantro, avocados, and onions. Or how about a dead beet dog topped with beets, walnuts, and spices, or a doggy llama with house spinach sauce, potatoes, and veggies. These are just a few examples of some of the unique combinations of flavor that you'll find loaded on your vegetarian CyberDog. And while the restaurant does serve dairy, you can ask them to veganize your dog as needed. After fondly savoring the choices on the menu, I finally decided on a Hungarian goulash dog, which was a hot dog covered in a generous amount of potatoes, fake beef, kraut, celery, carrots, and noodles, stewed with Hungarian spices and topped with fake bacon and onions. Not being a fan of sauerkraut, I actually omitted that part, but it still made for a very hearty meal requiring a knife and fork to eat, and with a combination like this on top of a fake wiener and bun, how can you go wrong? I was hungry and this hit the spot. Following that, I noticed that they had vegan cherry parfaits, so I just had to have one of those as well, clamoring for my chance at a luscious-sounding, cruelty-free dessert. It was all right, sporting a definite yogurty-type creamy filling encompassing the cherries and topped with slivered almonds. Tanya told me that she usually has vegan tiramisu as well, and I look forward to trying that out the next time I am there. CyberDogs is open 7 days a week until midnight, so I implore you to try it out the next time you are in the downtown Seattle area for some decent veggie eats. You can see a full menu and more at their website at www.cyber-dogs.com. And did you know that July is National Veggie Hot Dog Month?
Ooh, that's exciting.
Coincidentally enough,
yeah.
The National Hot Dog and Sausage Council has declared July as National Hot Dog Month. So for the fifth year in a row, the nonprofit organization Compassion Over Killing is celebrating with a compassionate twist via National Veggie Hot Dog Month. To find out more on how you can help expose the miseries forced upon tens of millions of pigs confined inside factory farms across North America each year, which of course real hot dogs are made out of, check out this Compassion Over Killing webpage at www.cok.net/feet, which is FEAT/hot dog day. There they will show you how to put on your own veggie hot dog event.
Cool.
So there you have it, veggie hot dogs. I just want to remind everyone that you're listening to the Animal Voices radio show here on Co-op Radio in Vancouver. It's 102.7 CFRO. And Joanne, what are your favorite kind of veggie hot dogs?
God, I don't know. Like what you were saying, it's what you put on top of them that makes them really good, right?
Well, I've never really done anything more than probably like fried onions and ketchup before. So
right.
this is definitely a new experience for me. If you're into fake hot dogs or real hot dogs,
mm-hmm.
try it out for sure.
And fake hot dogs are so much better because you know what hot dogs are made of, right? All the parts that they can't sell, so they just grind up.
When I was little, I remember my friend telling me they were made out of, what were they made out of? Like, chicken lips and hog's noses or something like that, and that always turned me off.
There's a t-shirt from Herbivore. I don't know if it's appropriate to talk about that, but it says, if you are what you eat and you eat a hot dog, then you are a butthole.
Yeah. Well said.
Well, so I think our next guest might be on the line now. Today marks the beginning of the annual animal cruelty event known as the Calgary Stampede. On the line to speak to us about it is Peter Fricker from the Vancouver Humane Society. Welcome, Peter, to Animal Voices.
Hi, Joanne.
Hi, Peter.
Hello.
The Vancouver Humane Society ran a full-page ad in the Calgary Herald in advance of the Calgary Stampede. Can you describe this ad for us?
Yes, it's basically just a picture of a calf that has been roped and is on the ground with a cowboy leaning over him. The calf is obviously in distress, and over that picture is a caption that says, "That's entertainment?"
And that was a full-page ad, wasn't it?
That's right, and wow. It appeared in the Calgary Herald on Monday.
And what was the reaction from the Stampede organizers and Calgarians in general when they saw this ad?
Well, we get a mixed reaction, as you can imagine. But what we've found, and we found this last year, is that there is actually a lot of people in Calgary and in Alberta who do not support the Stampede and do not support the rodeo. And judging by the emails and calls we've been getting, at the moment it's running about maybe 50-50. Last year it was 60% against 40% for. It's not a scientific poll or anything, but it's an indication that there certainly are lots of people in and around Calgary who disagree with the cruelty that's happening at the rodeo there.
And you mentioned last year, I think last year you submitted a different ad, which was actually rejected, so it never ran by the Herald. And I guess people still saw it regardless, didn't they?
Absolutely, because the rejection of the ad just created a media storm. And all kinds of other media just put it in their editorial. It's carried on television, on websites, and so on. So we actually probably got a lot more attention that way than from actually running the ad. However, this year, even though they changed their position and decided to go ahead with the ad, that also attracted media interest just because of the reversal of policy.
That's great. So it's a win-win for you every time.
I think it was.
I read that the SPCA and the Calgary Humane Society are actually on site monitoring the well-being of the animals at the Stampede, yet they don't seem to report any instances of cruelty. The Calgary Humane Society even went as far as posting on their website asking people to call if they happen to witness cruelty at the Stampede, as if cruelty is an anomaly. Why do you think they're not speaking out for the animals?
We have a major difference of opinion with the Calgary Humane Society. We're quite happy for them to monitor the events and work with the Stampede and even, you know, work on minor changes and that kind of thing and carry out their duty in terms of enforcing the provincial Prevention of Cruelty to Animals Act. But we don't think that that should preclude them speaking out and saying what they actually think of the event. Now, last year they just refused to say anything very explicitly or publicly about that. This year we found that they posted online on their website a press kit, and in that press kit, if you turned a few pages, you would find that they actually do state that they recommend that calf roping be eliminated and that they are fundamentally opposed to calf roping, steer wrestling, and chuck wagon racing. Now, those positions are virtually identical to our own, and we think that they should be willing to speak out very publicly with those positions, and that shouldn't have any effect on their ability to monitor what's actually happening to the animals and enforcing any existing laws and so forth. There's an interesting precedent here with the BCSBCA. A number of years ago, the SPCA here took exactly the same position, which is that they thought it was best to quietly monitor what was happening at the Cloverdale Rodeo, but to keep quiet about what their position was. They thought that wasn't advantageous. That changed in, I think, about 2006, when they actually came right out, issued a press release advising the public to boycott the Cloverdale Rodeo. And once that happened, things started to change, because there was a united front against the Cloverdale Rodeo, with people like Liberation BC, VHS, and the BCSBCA. And the major effect there was that up until then, the Cloverdale Rodeo was always able to say, we work with the BCSBCA. And the message to the public was that, well, if they're working with the SBCA, it must be okay. Everything must be fine with the animals. Once that sort of fig leaf was removed, they were exposed to complete criticism across the board from a whole range of animal groups. And that's really the message we're trying to give to the Calgary Humane Society and the Alberta SPCA, is that the more they allow the Stampede to claim that they're working in partnership, the more the public gets a confused and wrong message that that they're actually have the endorsement of those groups. And clearly that's not the case. We think they should make it absolutely clear to the public that they are fundamentally opposed to rodeo.
Do you think that they will come around and perhaps ask for a boycott sometime down the road?
We certainly hope so. At the very least, we know that they are trying to push the Stampede into making some minor changes to the events. Not nearly substantial enough for our liking, and they need to go a lot mm-hmm. further. But we know that they are now focusing on the Stampede as a major issue. We know that it's embarrassing for them, and we hope that the public and their own supporters in Calgary will continue to pressure them to come out and say what they think.
Right. I think if their donors start speaking, maybe they'll start listening.
Certainly.
Can you tell us about some of the cruelest events at the Calgary Stampede?
Well, we have focused on calf roping because we think it's probably the most inhumane event. In terms of the animal being young and immature, it's they are 3 to 4 months old. They are goaded out of a chute at high speed, up to 27 miles per hour, roped to a very sudden halt, mm-hmm. then picked up, slammed to the ground, and tied up. And we think, you know, most people, if they use their common sense, would say that that is self-evidently cruel. There's just no argument about it. They are obviously in distress. They're obviously being subjected to pain. They're obviously being put at risk of injury or death. And all for the sake of entertainment. It's, you know, some people, obviously, people who eat meat, you know, they would expect that there would be a certain amount of rough handling with livestock. But even people who eat meat would want would not think that you could justify treating an animal this way for mere entertainment. So we don't think anyone can support this event. Some of the other events, the chuck wagon racing at the Stampede, which was invented for the Stampede back in 1923 and has nothing to do with any real ranch practice. We've seen 50 horses die in that event since 1986, and three died just last year. It's obviously putting the horses at far too much risk, and, you know, we'd like to see an end to that event as well. All the other roping events, team roping and so on, those are the kinds of things that the Cloverdale Rodeo finally admitted were inhumane and eliminated them from their program. And we think that there's a good precedent there for the Stampede. One thing we keep telling the Stampede is look at the Cloverdale Rodeo. They dropped four major events, and yet in 2008, 2009, the years after they made that decision, they continued to have record crowds. It has had no effect on their attendance, no negative effect whatsoever. What we've found most recently with the Stampede's own marketing data is that only 16% of people who attend the Stampede actually attend the rodeo. There's so many other events, so many other activities that people take part in. It's actually a small part of the Stampede. And we think that if the Stampede were to begin by dropping calf roping at the very least, it would have no effect on people wanting to go to those other events. And the Stampede could carry on quite happily for years, in our view, without a rodeo. They just need to show some imagination and start those changes.
Mm-hmm. I certainly experienced that at the Cloverdale Rodeo this year. I was out there, and lots of people were going to the Cloverdale Fair, and a lot of them are saying that they're boycotting the rodeo part of it.
Exactly. We think that, you know, today what people are looking for is non-controversial, family-oriented entertainment mm-hmm. that everybody can enjoy, that there's nothing negative about it. And we think the Stampede and the Cloverdale Rodeo and all these country fairs could easily phase out the rodeo element and still have a popular fair.
Mm-hmm. Yesterday, an interesting article came out. More than 50 members of the Parliament in Britain signed a motion condemning rodeo and calling the Canadian government to stop the immense cruelty of events like the Calgary Stampede. What are your thoughts about this?
Well, we're extremely pleased about that, and we have a British animal charity called the League Against Cruel Sports to thank for getting that motion tabled in Parliament. We started talking to the League about a year ago about getting their support against rodeo in Canada. They're mainly known for helping getting fox hunting banned in Britain, but they also work on international issues such as bullfighting. And we were really pleased when they offered to lend their support with the Calgary Stampede, and especially because they are going to target the travel industry in Britain that conducts or offers packages and tours to the Stampede. We think that that will bring additional pressure on the Stampede to make some changes.
Great. Do you think the Stampede is paying attention to what the British Parliament is saying right now?
We think they'll certainly pay attention if it begins to have an effect on Calgary's image, mm-hmm. on tourism to Calgary and to Alberta. And as we've told them, we see this as a first step to internationalizing pressure on the Stampede. I think what they need to think about is what's happened with the seal industry and the international attention that was brought to that issue, where we've seen the United States put a ban on fur, with boycotts taking place, and with the European Parliament voting to put a ban on seal fur. I don't think Calgary and Alberta, with the image it already has, the image problems it already has with the tar sands, would like to see international attention brought to the city because of animal welfare issues. If they're really smart, they will start making changes now.
Mm-hmm. Now, what can people do to help Vancouver Humane Society's campaign against the Calgary Stampede?
Well, what I would suggest that would be really helpful if people went to our website, vancouverhumanesociety.bc.ca, click on the Ban Calf Roping button, which will take them to a page about the issue, and if they scroll down, they'll see a number of actions they can take, things like writing to the head of the Stampede, writing to some of the key sponsors. We think that will really make a difference.
Mm-hmm. That's a good idea. And what are some of the key sponsors that you're targeting right now?
The one we'd really like people to focus on is Bell Canada,
okay.
which is one of their major sponsors, and they also specifically sponsor rodeo events. Some of the corporate sponsors, they support other parts of the Stampede, but Bell Canada specifically sponsors the rodeo. And we think if people were to contact the CEO there, and the address is on the website, with letters, we think that would help make a difference. One thing, if they are a Bell subscriber, one thing they can do is make mention of the fact that it's very easy to switch to another cell phone provider.
Great. That's a wonderful idea. Thank you so much, Peter, for
Thank
all the
you,
wonderful
Peter.
Work you're doing.
Thank you. Appreciate the time.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye. To find out more about Vancouver Humane Society and their campaign against the Stampede, please visit vancouverhumanesociety.bc.ca. Over to you, Allison.
I have this week's upcoming events. On Saturday, July the 10th, that's tomorrow at 5:30 p.m., there will be an Earth Save Beach potluck at Jericho Beach Park on the grass at the end of Point Grey Road in Vancouver. This is the second of Earth Save's popular beach potlucks of the summer. The weather is going to be gorgeous tomorrow, making it perfect outdoor beach potluck weather, so this is one not to be missed. There are usually about 30 to 50 people at these events, so that means 30 to 50 delicious vegan dishes to enjoy. This is a public event, and everyone is welcome to attend. I will be attending myself. Make sure to bring a dish for sharing with no animal products in it, so that everyone from vegan to omnivore can partake. Don't forget to bring a serving spoon, a plate, cutlery, and something to drink. For more information, please go to meetup.com and search for Vancouver Meatless Meetup. Also on Saturday, July the 10th at 10 p.m. Eastern and Pacific Standard Time, and July the 11th at 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the CBC News Network, there is a television documentary playing called Jellyfish Invasion. They have become the curse of beach holidays, permeating every ocean on the globe, thriving in the Arctic and the tropics. In an ever-changing world where other species struggle to endure, jellyfish populations are on the rise. To the untrained eye, they're gelatinous blobs drifting aimlessly on the ocean's currents. But jellyfish are among the most feared and least understood creatures on Earth, and their populations are exploding across the world. They lack sharp claws, piercing teeth, or even a brain, but they are armed with an amazing arsenal of weapons. For hundreds of millions of years, jellyfish have been evolving, developing into the ultimate survivor. So this is a documentary all about jellyfish. And did you know, Joanne, that I got stung by a jellyfish this year?
Really? Where?
In Barbados.
Really? Places. What's that feel like?
It hurts. I mean, there were tons of little jellyfish swimming everywhere, and I was swimming in the ocean and trying to avoid them. And we were in deep water, so it wasn't like I could get away, right? I was just trying to, like, avoid them. But they were just everywhere. You couldn't avoid them. And so, and I did feel like a sting on my leg. And then when I got out of the water, I could see a welt there. So
wow.
That was just a little jellyfish.
That's exciting.
On Sunday, July the 11th, from 1:30 to 4:30 p.m., a powerful voice animal rights community dialogue series will be presenting its second season, focusing on planning fun and entertaining outreach events. This is hosted by Liberation BC at Rada Yoga and Eatery at 728 Main Street in Vancouver. Do you want to see fun and exciting outreach events happen in Vancouver? Do you have ideas for music, theater, poetry, or art performances that promote compassion for animals? Join other like-minded activists and passionate animal lovers in creating and planning outreach events that go beyond the ordinary. Join the discussion whether you have ideas, skills, or talents you would like to put to use or just want to help. Everyone is welcome to attend. This is the second of the series of animal rights community dialogues hosted by Liberation BC. To register for this event, go to http://apowerfulvoice.eventbrite.com, and that's Bright spelt B-R-I-T-E. Now, I forgot to check the attendance so far yesterday. Do you have a clue, Joanne, of how many people are going so far? I know there's still spaces, right?
There's still spaces, but they're really filling up in the last couple of days. I didn't see the real count, but I keep getting people keep signing up for them. So
that's great to hear. Yeah, people always sign up for things at the last
minute. I know,
this
they
is
do.
An event where you can do that, I guess. So
So
this would be a great event to come out to, and I totally look forward to see what the results of this are. On Saturday, July the 24th, it's Animal Freedom Day, and this is happening all over the world. Animal Freedom Day is a global event that aims to raise awareness about the need for animal rights in every society and to create positive solutions for the protection of animals. It is a day in which people from all walks of life cease to consume animal or animal byproducts and to gain support for the goal of putting an end to the slaughtering of animals, animal abuse, and the creation of alternative food sources. I urge you to find out more by checking out the website for this global event at www.animalfreedomday.com. This event is organized by Hamilton, Ontario's 18-year-old animal activist, Nadia Masoudi, and we'll actually be having her on the show next week to talk to us more about this event. So I am looking forward to that.
What a great little activist.
Yeah, she's doing a lot of great work, and we'll find out definitely a lot more next week. If you have an animal or a vegetarian related event coming up that you would like to have announced on the show, please email us the details at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com or post it on our Facebook page, which is Animal Voices Vancouver. And once again, I want to remind you, you're listening to 102.7 FM CFRO Co-op Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada.
Thanks for that, Allison. So now it's time for the Animal Voices News. Did you hear that the 12% HST applies to single-serving size containers of plant-based milks, such as soy milk, rice milk, and almond milk, but not to the single servings of cow's milk? Good news is that there's no HST on the 1-liter cartons of plant milks. It's just when you get the single serving sizes, which I think people shouldn't get anyway because it's bad for the environment. But still, it's, Ron Smith, the executive director of the BC Milk Producers Association, said that the dairy industry supports the HST because it reduces input costs. So here you have it, and this is where your HST is going. So stop drinking cow's milk if you truly want to fight the HST. I've already mentioned this before earlier in our first interview. More than 50 members of parliament in Britain have signed a motion condemning rodeo and calling on the Canadian government to take steps to stop the immense cruelty of events like the Calgary Stampede, which begins today. The motion tabled in the UK House of Commons Thursday coincided with an announcement from the League Against Cruel Sports that it is pressuring travel companies to stop promoting packages tours to the Calgary Stampede. The Surrey UK-based group is asking its supporters to write to the Canadian High Commission to voice their opposition to the rodeo. Do you want to know how backwards we are? Rodeo has been banned in Britain since 1934. Arnold Schwarzenegger has signed AB 1437, a bill backed by the Humane Society of the United States that requires that starting in 2015, all shell whole eggs sold in California must come from hens who were able to stand up, lie down, turn around, and fully extend their limbs without touching one another or the sides of an enclosure. In other words, California will become a cage-free state. Proposition 2, approved by voters in November 2008, phases out the extreme confinement of laying hens in cages by 2015. AB 1437 applies the standards contained within Prop 2 to the sale of shell eggs, which means eggs imported from other states to California all have to be from cage-free hens. With 40 million consumers in California, it would be hard to overestimate the potential of this bill to change the way laying hens are treated throughout the United States. Farm Sanctuary announced that the Biggest Loser trainer, Bob Harper, who recently became vegan, will be the 2010 Walk for Farm Animals spokesperson. Harper will join the thousands of people across the United States and right here in Vancouver who will take part in the event annually to help raise funds for Farm Sanctuary, the leading farm animal protection organization. Bob is just as passionate about animal protection as he is about health and fitness, and we couldn't be happier, and he's working with us to speak out for farm animals, the Farm Sanctuary president and co-founder Gene Bauer said. And just a little surprise for everybody here in Vancouver, in September, when we do the Walk for Farm Animals, Gene Bauer is actually going to be here in Vancouver, so we're going to be doing a big event welcoming Gene Bauer and doing some fundraising for Farm Sanctuary.
Yeah, I really look forward to that. And the Walk for Farm Animals, too, of course.
Yes, and that will be happening at the end of September.
Right. Okay, so we have our next interviewee on the phone, Joanne.
Great. I am so excited and a little starstruck to be introducing our next guest. Rory Friedman is the co-author of New York Times best-selling book, Skinny Bitch. According to the cover of the book, Skinny Bitch is a no-nonsense, tough love guide for savvy girls who want to stop eating crap and start looking fabulous. This book jumped to the number 3 in the New York Times bestseller list after Posh Spice was spotted reading it. And ever since then, the Skinny Bitch bookshelf has expanded to encompass a collection of books. Skinny Bitch in the Kitch, Skinny Bastard, Skinny Bitch Bun in the Oven, and Skinny Bitchin'. We are so honored to welcome co-author Rory Friedman on our show. Welcome to Animal Voices, Rory.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here.
Welcome, Rory.
Thank you.
And what inspired you to write Skinny Bitch?
The animals, definitely ahead of everything else, the animals. You know, first and foremost, I am an animal rights activist. And 16 years ago, when I was eating meat for every single meal and wearing leather and not thinking twice about animals, although calling myself an animal lover, I learned about how animals were treated and how they were kept in factory farm conditions and how they were slaughtered so that I could eat them.
Right.
And in that moment, I became a vegetarian. And, you know, since that time have evolved to veganism and animal rights activism. And I had the very strong feeling that if more people knew exactly what it was they were contributing to every time they sit down to eat meat, they would feel the same way that I felt. And Skinny Bitch was an attempt to get that message out there.
That's great. The language used in this book is really quite unique, but very familiar. And I'm just going to read one line from this book to demonstrate. The Atkins diet, Eat the flesh of dead cows, dead pigs, and dead chickens. Avoid fresh fruit. You are a total moron if you think Atkins diet will make you thin. So what made you and Kim decide to write your book in this style? Was it your intention to reach a specific audience?
You know, when I'm sitting down to write and I have all this information in front of me and I have images of animals being tortured and slaughtered and I'm finding out about how the USDA is not keeping our food safe, I'm mad. I'm just seething mad. And that's the only way to describe it. And when I'm writing, it comes out in that anger. And, you know, in a lot of ways it's funny, and sometimes I'm laughing out loud at myself while I'm writing, you know, writing the pooping chapter. I definitely had a good time coming up for different euphemisms for pooping. But, yeah, there's a lot of anger and there's a lot of passion behind the information, and I think, you know, people feel the same way. And when they read the book and then they, you know, email and say, this book changed my life, they like that language, and because they're mad too, and I think it incites that same horror in them as they're reading. And I think also, for me, you know, reading a book about nutrition or scientific information, it's not my thing. It bores me. It puts me to sleep. I don't want to. I'm not a scientist. I'm just a regular girl who wants to eat well and enjoy food and who cares about animals. So I think in writing the book in a really straightforward, easy-to-read manner, it makes the information more digestible for people, and that's certainly the feedback that I've been getting.
Yeah, I think, you know, whether we want to admit it or not, this is the kind of language we're around all the time, but we're not really used to seeing it in writing. And I think maybe this is why this book has such an appeal, not just to women, but men as well, because we're very familiar with this kind of language.
Yeah, and I think, you know, certainly some people who aren't big on swearing may be put off by the book, and that's totally fine. There's amazing other books out there on the topic of vegan nutrition. The China Study is amazing. I highly recommend it for people who are maybe just a little more intellectual than Skinny Bitch audience members, or for people who just aren't comfortable with swearing, pick up the China Study. It will blow your mind.
So whenever someone tells me they're vegan, I always ask, what made you vegan? And I can almost always count on three answers. Either it's because they read Diet for a New America, they saw Earthlings, or they read Skinny Bitch. Why do you think Skinny Bitch is so successful at causing that lifestyle change?
I think it's just really reaching a wide audience in that people don't know what they're getting. And this was the entire reasoning, you know, behind the title and the artwork and not saying the V word anywhere on the cover or the back cover of the book. You know, my intention, the day that I decided that I wanted to write this book, I had that epiphany. If more people had this information, they would change. They would do something different. But nobody wants this information. Nobody wants to sit down and read about factory farms and slaughterhouses. So if I can make this book and put it in this stupid, ridiculous package, and women who read, you know, silly fashion magazines and who watch silly, you know, fashion TV shows, they'll pick it up and they'll read it. Everybody in our culture is obsessed with being thin. They'll pick it up, they'll read it, and then they'll get that information about factory farms and slaughterhouses. So it was very much the idea of a wolf in sheep's clothing that, you know, I was after, which definitely attracts people to the book. But then the compelling information inside, you know, when you do read about factory farming and slaughterhouses and how meat and dairy products are terrible for your health and terrible for the environment and terrible for the animals, it's information that changes your life and that sticks with you. And I think that's the ultimate success of the series.
Now, a lot of women probably pick up your book, like you said, because they're looking for a fad diet and a quick fix. Do you think traditional weight loss diets work?
No, I don't, because being skinny, if it were enough motivation for people, then they would stick with those diets. Because if you really, truly, truly cared about being skinny that much, then you wouldn't keep eating the way that you were eating or doing the things that you were doing that keep you overweight. But when you read information like the stuff in Skinny Bitch or Skinny Bastard, it's compelling enough that you're not doing it for yourself anymore. You're not doing it because you're now obsessed with being skinny anymore. You're now obsessed with what's happening with the animals, with how badly you've been treating your body, and all the crap that you've been poisoning yourself with. And I think that's the motivation and that's the compelling information that actually gets people to make lasting and profound changes. I know for my health, I never cared about my health and I never ate well. Until I learned about factory farming and slaughterhouses, that was the motivation for me to change my diet. And now I care about my health because I've been cleaning up my diet slowly but surely, and then it came in the reverse.
I think it's true for a lot of vegans. We do it for the animals, and then all the health benefits are just kind of like the side effects of it.
Mm-hmm.
Can you give us a brief summary of what the skinny bitch lifestyle entails?
You know, just to sum it up and make it really easy and clear, mm-hmm. it's about eating great, it's about enjoying food, but it's about doing better for your body, better for the planet, and better for the animals. And it's just really easy and it's really fun. You know, I'm obsessed with food, I'm obsessed with eating, and I'm an animal lover, and mm-hmm. I care about the environment. But beyond that, I'm not like this crazy lunatic. I don't measure food on a scale and put it on a plate. I don't only eat organic food. I don't only eat foods that are blue. I'm not an insane person. Mm-hmm. I eat out in restaurants. I go to dinner parties. You know, I cook at home. I do it all. I travel a lot. It's easy. It's really mm-hmm. easy. It's easy to eat well. It's easy to enjoy food, and it's easy to do it all on a vegan diet. And I didn't think it was at the beginning. When I first went vegetarian and vegan, it was challenging because, like anything else that's new for you, there's a learning curve. And I spent a lot of money buying products that tasted like crap until I found the ones that were good and that I liked. In Vancouver, you guys are lucky. Gardein is based in Vancouver. It's the best meat product out there.
Mm-hmm.
They've got a ton of different flavors and varieties of meat substitutes that will knock your socks off. And it's bar none better than anything I've had in my 16 years of vegetarianism.
Awesome. And even in Vancouver, you know, we have all this meat substitutes. We still have a lot of meat eaters, and a lot of our listeners are meat eaters. What advice would you give to people who want to start the skinny bitch lifestyle but are too overwhelmed with the thoughts of maybe, you know, never eating another hot dog or steak again?
I'm so glad you asked that, because I totally understand why it would overwhelm people. And I don't want anyone to feel overwhelmed. You don't have to go from 0 to 60 overnight. Just start somewhere. Do something. You know, pick up a copy of Skinny Bitch. Buy it used on Craigslist or eBay. Borrow it from a friend. Get it from the library.
I got it from the thrift store for $2.
I love it. I'm all about reduce, reuse, recycle. I never buy books, new books, very rarely.
I thought that was a very lucky find.
Oh, good. Well, pass it along, borrow it, and then make the change slowly but surely. You know, I always tell people to visit GoVeg.com, where you can get a free vegetarian starter kit mailed to you. And then I like to challenge people to do a 30-day veg pledge.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to worry about the rest of your life never eating meat ever again. That's way too overwhelming and daunting.
Mm-hmm.
Try it for 30 days. See how it makes you feel. Get excited about it. Recruit a friend or family member or boyfriend or girlfriend to do it with you. Pick a day coming up in the very near future, maybe starting July 15th through August 15th, and then make it real. Commit to it and stick with it and do a 30-day veg pledge just to see how it feels and just to see what it's like.
Now, you talk a lot in the book about reading ingredient labels. Why do you think it's so important to read ingredient labels?
You know, one of the things that when I was eating meat and dairy products and a junk food eater, you know, I just mm-hmm. ate fast food and convenience store food all the time, and I mm-hmm. didn't care about what was putting into my body. When I did become vegetarian and then vegan, I started to develop different taste buds. I actually started liking fruits and vegetables, and I actually started caring about my health when before I never did. And eventually, I started caring about what I was putting in my body, and I could actually taste the difference between, you know, junky, crappy foods and good foods and healthy foods and whole foods. So I started reading labels and reading ingredients, and I know for people who are making changes, it's very overwhelming, and there's so much stuff out there. Do I compare calories? Do I read fat grams?
Mm-hmm.
Do I go to the USDA, the RDA, what's recommended in these foods and what isn't? No, I just read the labels and I read what is in this, because sometimes a label in the front of the package will say, like, healthy, natural, organic. That doesn't mean anything. What you want to do is read the ingredients and know exactly what it is that you're putting in your body. And if it's chemicals or if it's junk that you don't understand or if it's a huge mile-long list of ingredients and sugars at the top of that list, you don't need it and you don't want it. So just become more discerning. But this part has nothing to do with veganism. You know, if you're mm-hmm. talking about being vegetarian, it just means you're not eating dead animals anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So don't be overwhelmed if you're a junk food eater that overnight you have to become a health food eater and read labels. You can still, if you want to, drink soda, drink coffee, drink beer, eat corn chips, you know, pig out. you can still do all that on a vegetarian diet. You know, you can. When I first became vegetarian, I was still a junk food eater. I was just a vegetarian junk food eater. So, you know, as Kathy Freston, the author of Quantum Wellness, always talks about in her books, lean in. She talks about leaning in. Mm-hmm. You don't have to go from 0 to 60 overnight. Lean into a different lifestyle than the one that you're in today.
Which is fattier, fat-free milk or soy milk?
Who cares? Again, we're talking about, you know, reading fat grams or calories. Mm-hmm. I don't care. I don't know. The bottom line is this. I like to use my common sense because common sense sticks with me all the time. I forget scientific facts every single day. I forget mm-hmm. nutritional information every day. Common sense sticks with me. I don't suck my mom's boobs anymore as a 35-year-old woman. And most adults that I know don't breastfeed from their moms either. We're the only species on the planet that drinks the milk of another species. We're the only species on the planet that drinks milk as adults. The only reason we do this is because the dairy industry has convinced us that we need these products for our bone strength and our bone health, mm-hmm. and nothing could be further from the truth. Studies done by Harvard, Yale, Penn State, the National Institutes of Health, they have all found that dairy products are not a deterrent for osteoporosis. And in fact, the countries that have the highest rates of osteoporosis are the ones that have the highest intake of dairy products.
Mm-hmm.
Terrible.
I know, and they've been telling us lies that we need to drink more milk to have strong bones, but that's not
yep.
the truth.
It is horrifying, and that's one of the reasons I swear a lot.
Now, besides Skinny Bitch, you also co-authored Skinny Bitch Bun in the Oven. I've recommended this book whenever a pregnant friend is being pressured by their doctor to eat animal products, which seems to be quite often. Why did you write this book?
It's the same exact reason, you know, so many women who are pregnant who are vegetarian or vegan to start with, they then go to their OBGYNs mm-hmm. and these doctors scare them that they have to start ingesting all these other foods that they have been successfully avoiding and thriving on forever. And there's just no scientific evidence that's backing that up. There really didn't seem to be many books on the topic of vegan pregnancy or vegetarian pregnancy, so we wanted to put that out there and get that information out there so women could feel good about their decision to be vegetarian and vegan through their pregnancies and then raise healthy, happy vegan babies.
Do you think doctors who ask pregnant women to start consuming animal products have any idea what they're talking about?
I think, unfortunately, most medical doctors do not have almost any training when it comes to nutrition. There was a Senate mm-hmm. study in the United States that revealed that most medical doctors had less than 4 hours of nutritional training in their entire time in medical school. And unfortunately, all this information that they're getting is so old and so outdated. You know, back when we actually all believed as a world, which unfortunately most of us still do, that, for example, you know, we need dairy products for calcium. Most medical doctors, most nutritionists, most registered dietitians believe this. Unfortunately, they're not reading the actual scientific studies that are saying the exact opposite. You know, it starts as early as childhood, and in a lot of schools, the dairy industry is giving teaching aids to the teachers so that from an early time, kids are getting information that was literally handed down from the dairy industry to their teachers. Imagine if, you know, Burger King or McDonald's was coming into our schools and giving our teachers these teaching kits mm-hmm. about their products. It's no different. Milk is a commercial product, and they are sneaking their ways into our schools. Terrible.
I don't understand why that's even allowed, but I guess it has
just,
to do with government subsidies and the program to have milk in schools and
yep.
all intertwined.
Hideous, hideous, hideous.
No, and I think it's really unfortunate that when pregnant women are told by their doctors, they feel all this overwhelming guilt about, you know, torturing their unborn babies. So in the few years since the book has come out, have you seen any changes in the perception about vegan pregnancies?
You know, that's a good question, and I haven't really paid attention to it, so
yeah.
I can't answer for sure. I think in general, I'm seeing so much more veganism everywhere.
Yeah.
Whether it's coming from the animal rights realm, whether it's coming from the health realm, or if it's coming from the environmental realm. I think more and more people are catching on that we don't need to eat meat and we don't need to eat dairy products for our health, and that it's actually healthier to avoid these products, and that in doing so, we're going to be sparing the animals from a terrible life of suffering and misery And we're also going to be doing Good for Our Planet, which is in peril because the number one cause of climate change is animal agriculture. And that's more than all of transportation combined.
That's a shocking fact.
Animal agriculture is the leading cause of climate change.
Shocking fact. And I think more environmentalists should really be promoting a vegetarian or a vegan diet.
Agreed. You know, I was thrilled when the movie Inconvenient Truth came out, but really the most inconvenient truth of all is that animal agriculture is ruining our planet.
Mm-hmm. Now, your book, Skinny Bastard, is aimed at getting men to live healthier and a vegan lifestyle. What do you think are some of the challenges that are unique to men for following the Skinny Bastard lifestyle?
I think it's two things. The first one is public perception that men think they have to eat meat or they are going to be looked at as big wussies. And unfortunately, it just seems to be stigmatized in the eyes of men that they're not tough if they're vegetarian. And nothing could be further from the truth. I mean, the animal rights movement is definitely heavy in the women area and low in the man area.
Yeah.
What these men don't realize is that they will have their pick of the litter if they stroll in the vegetarian world. They will be, the ratio is like 100 to 1. But, you know, there's professional athletes, there's bodybuilders, there's ultra marathoners, there's triathletes, there's Ironmen. There's all these big, buff, you know, muscular, crazy men who are vegetarian and vegan and who are thriving on a plant-based diet. One guy, Rip Esselstyn, he wrote The Engine 2 Diet. He's this big, buff fireman. His father is Caldwell Esselstyn, who is a cardiologist, a world-renowned cardiologist who writes about plant-based diets. This guy is no wuss. John Joseph, who is the frontman for this crazy punk band called the Cro-Mags. If you saw John in a dark alley, you'd be terrified. He looks like he will break a bottle over your face. And he's vegan, and he's a tough guy. You know, he's a big, buff, tough guy. He rides his bike in Manhattan, like, I don't even know how many miles a day. He jogs, I don't know how many miles a day. And he just wrote a book called Meat is for Pussies. So if Skinny Bastard's not for you, check out his book. But I know just to get past that taboo for men, I think would be a big, big, big struggle for a lot of guys. But you don't have to look any further than, you know, professional athletes to find that lots of guys are doing it.
Mm-hmm. That's a really good point because we're always scratching our heads, you know, saying, how come there aren't more men involved in this movement? How come there aren't more vegan men?
Mm-hmm. Oh, and you know what? I need to address the second thing quickly is protein. Men's have, and a lot of people have this, not just men, but men in particular have this thing that they need these mass amounts of protein in order to compete in any athletic realm. And certainly, you know, if you're building muscle, you do need a bit of extra protein compared to what more normal people need. But the biggest myth out there in the vegetarian world is that you think you're not going to get enough protein as a vegetarian, and that is absolutely not the case. Again, there are professional bodybuilders who are vegans who are ripped beyond belief and have these crazy shredded muscular bodies on a plant-based diet. Again, professional athletes, ultra marathoners. These guys are running I don't even know how many miles in crazy, ridiculous heat, and they are doing it all on vegan diets. The protein myth, it's got to get tossed out there for these guys to get on the bus.
Yeah, and there's a guy in the States that just broke the American record for like the 24-hour marathon or something, and he did it on a vegan diet.
Was it Scott Jurek?
Scott Jurek.
Yeah, that's
yeah,
him.
Yeah, Scott Jurek. He's a beast. He's an ultra-marathon beast. And I had the pleasure of meeting him recently at an event, and he couldn't be nicer, sweeter guy. And he just looks so healthy. And he's got this happiness and this genuine radiance coming from within. And it's because he's on a plant-based diet, and he's not poisoning his body with contaminated flesh of dead, tortured animals.
Are there tips in Skinny Bastard about how to get ripped?
There are tips about getting ripped, and there's also, you know, I know this is a really foreign, you know, way of eating for a lot of men who have grown up on the meat and potatoes diet, much like I did. So there's a 4-week menu plan in there to get guys started and to give them just, you know, this sort of baseline of how to start. If you don't know how to start, here's a great way. And I just remembered, actually, also, there's a lot of mixed martial arts guys out there who are doing the vegan thing. I mean, these are guys who, for a living, beat people up. They punch and kick and strangle people in a ring for a living. And these guys are also vegans.
Right. Mac Danzig, he's a pretty buff guy, and he's a vegan.
He's a vegan. I met him at a Cro-Mag show. John Joseph was performing, And he's a beast. He's a total beast. Jake Shields is a vegetarian. He's another MMA guy. There's a guy, I'm forgetting his name. I think his name is Rob Smallwood, who's an arm wrestler. He's this big monster arm wrestler, vegan. And he beat a guy at a competition who was a dairy farmer. His family
is
dairy
farmers.
Rob Bigwood, Rob Smallwood. I'm so sorry I'm forgetting his name. But, yeah, he's another monster, another veg monster.
That's awesome. You get to meet all these buff guys. I'm very jealous.
Yeah, it is fun. It's a good byproduct of having vegan friends.
So what demographic of men pick up Skinny Bastard? Do you know?
It's across the board. It's the same as Skinny Bitch. You know, I get emails from people from all over the world and from all ages. You know, they're teenagers up until their 70s because the message, you know, some people don't necessarily relate to the swearing, the older people sometimes. but, you know, across the board, the information is compelling at any age. And then the proof is in the pudding. When people start changing their diet, they start to feel different, they start to feel better. And they want their friends and their family members to get on board, too.
And so what's next in the Skinny Bitch adventure?
Right now, there is a calendar that just came out. It's like a 2011 Skinny Bitch calendar, like a one-a-day calendar. And that's exciting. And now I am back to the drawing board to figure out how I can be most effective and what it is that I should be doing next with my time, so that I can be an effective advocate for animals.
We're very much looking forward to the calendar. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you, Rory.
Thank
that
you
was
so
fun.
Much. Thanks
take care.
For having me, and thanks for you guys doing what you're doing. Keep up the great work.
Oh, you too.
Thank you.
Take care.
Take care. You've been listening to the Animal Voices radio show on Co-op Radio 102.7 CFRO in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Remember to sign up for our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver, and join us on Twitter at Animal Voices YVR. And please do send us your suggestions and comments about the show either on Facebook or via email at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. Next week on the show, please join us again as we'll be interviewing local Vancouver activist Ray Vasudevan of Skinned, who will be speaking to us about her ongoing campaign against the hotel publication Guest Life with their fur ads. And for our feature interview next week, we will be speaking with 18-year-old Ontario activist Nadia Masoudi on Animal Freedom Day, a global event that happens on July 24th, as well as her upcoming documentary called Don't Eat Me. Please tune in again next week, and thank you for listening.
Bye.